Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or are just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Today I talked to Brad Evoy, the organizational coordinator of the Guelph chapter of the Ontario Public Interest Research Group, or OPIRG, as part of a half-hearted back-to-school theme I developed for the podcast in the last few weeks of summer. I thought it might be fun and interesting to learn more about this campus group that has a big reach throughout the city, off-campus as well. So on this podcast, we will aim on behalf of you, the listener, to put the P and the I and the R back in OPIRG. That's the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, OPIRG dates back to the 1970s, which makes it not much older than the U of G itself. Inspired by the example of Ralph Nader, who had just visited Guelph at the time and was then more known for his consumer advocacy than his political career, some local activists banded together to form not the first, but one of the first OPIRG chapters in the province. This was a difficult and fascinating time, a time of immense difficulties but also tremendous opportunities. These were the days of Trudeau Mania 1.0, the early years of the burgeoning environmental movement, the exploding demand for queer rights, and the general expansion of the struggle for civil rights and social justice. OPIRG would paint itself at the forefront of many of these causes locally and remain there for the last four decades. It hasn't been an easy road, it hasn't always been successful, and the organization has been politicized to varying degrees along the way. But OPIRG is still, as they say, fighting the good fight. Now, the cast of OPIRG changes over the years, and one of the newest people on the team is Brad Evoy. As I said, he's the organizational coordinator, which is exactly what it sounds in terms of a position at OPIRG. Evoy coordinates between the staff, the board, and all the other PIRGs across the O, and is also responsible for policy development. He's been a, shall we say, professional activist for 10 years, both in Ontario and where he hails from back in Newfoundland. And as someone who coordinates, these first few weeks on campus are obviously very busy for him, so we're lucky he was able to give us some of his time to do a podcast. So on this week's edition of the program, I talked to Evoy about the history of OPIRG, both his own history with it and the four decades of activism tradition within it. We also talk about how that activism has changed over the years and how OPIRG has been successful in helping to change the conversation and where the challenges still remained for Evoy and friends as they tackle another school and political year in an even more charged environment than they might have experienced in the past. Politically charged, not, you know, environmentally charged. Although there is that. There's also a laundry list of upcoming OPIRG activities, which you will be able to hear about at the end of the show, so stick around. So I caught up with Brad Evoy last week in studio. So Brad Evoy, thank you for joining me today.
Happy to be here, Adam.
To begin with, OPIRG's been a part of campus life for, over 40 years, actually.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's definitely an establishment, but, you know, for anyone who is coming in and new to OPIRG and you have maybe heard the name, maybe you're familiar with, you know, there are branches all over, as they say. How do you describe OPIRG to someone new?
So what I often say to folks is that OPIRG is your, you know, campus space to get involved in social and environmental justice activism. It's we have a pretty broad mandate in terms of getting involved in all sorts of things. I tend to tell people that we get involved in everything from, tree planting to stopping pipelines. it's a pretty broad mandate, right? So, like, there's lots of different ways folks can get involved. Our action groups are probably the most prominent way that a lot of folks get involved in things with OPIRG. Particularly things with fossil-free Guelph. They're doing a lot of things on, like, fossil fuel divestment in the past few years. Folks at Guelph Anti-Pipeline that do a lot of Indigenous sovereignty and a lot of Indigenous solidarity kind of support work. More recently, folks with Students Offering Welcome that do Syrian refugee support and migrant justice Guelph. So, yeah.
It's interesting because one might hear, you know, divesting fossil free Guelph, that all these kind of involve oil.
A lot of them do, yeah.
But they all have sort of very different mandates, which speaks to how big some of these issues that OPIRG deals with are, that you need to sort of micro
micro-target specific areas of dealing with it.
Absolutely, right? You know, OPERG is one of those groups that, like, you can get involved with, you know, areas of social justice in so many different ways, right? Like, there are folks who, you know, in the past of the organization have done food justice stuff or disability justice or, you know, we've mentioned, like, indigenous sovereignty and things around, like, environmental protection. But, like, OPERG has been, in its 40-year history, has kind of gone around all of those different things. Some of our, like, early research projects, you know, that you can find hidden away in our office are from, like, 1976, when folks were involved in, you know, supporting Grassy Narrows when issues around the mercury spill there along the English and Wabagoon River. When that first started, we have some of the early documents on that, and people who were at OPERG Guelph were involved in those struggles. So, yeah.
Struggle's still going in that case, too. Yeah. There is that history there, and I appreciate you have not been around for all 40 years of OPERG.
Yes.
But from how you understand it, how has OPERG changed in that 40 years? Or is it, you know, the same organization, just the issues look slightly different, maybe with the exception of Grassy Narrows, which still is a mess after all these years.
Yeah, it's a huge issue, and it's a huge issue that the Ontario government continues to you know, drag their feet on for the Indigenous communities there.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of OPERG, I mean, I think that, you know, as the OPERG local and provincial history nerd, which is my thing, it's interesting, right? Because OPERG, when it was founded by a lot of folks that are actually from Guelph, but were involved in bringing Ralph Nader to campus. And Ralph Nader, you know, the Pergs kind of come out of his whole notion of, like, Nader's Raiders in the late 60s that were all really devoted to, like, consumer protection and public interest law. And so, like, our work has kind of shifted from that perspective. And I think, like, OPERG and QPERG in Quebec are particular in shifting a little bit towards more broader, like, activism support and more broadly different kinds of research projects, you know, like, you wouldn't have seen OPERG in the 70s, per se, involved in, like, invasive species removal, which is something that we do now as well, right? So it's a variety of things that we kind of get involved in, but I think our mandate is definitely broadened as we've gone along.
Well, the issues have broadened. I had Barry Smith, who's a climate change expert here at the university, and he talked about, you know, being there on when climate change study became a thing in the early 80s. Yeah. And he said, well, we had no idea at the time that climate change would lead to things like more invasive species. So it's not necessarily OPERG's mandate that has broadened, but the circumstances have forced the broadening of the mandate.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you have to look at some of these issues in a broad way too, right? Because you have to look at, for example, when you're looking at environmental justice, you also have to think about, like, how does this impact Indigenous folks? How does this broadly impact racialized and low-income communities through environmental racism, right? Like, they're particularly OPERG Guelph is known as kind of the green perg out of the bunch. and I think that, like, as we think about, like, environmental justice in particular, it's something that, like, for us, I think we've tried to broaden our look instead of just being, like, you know, about recycling and about our river cleanup, which we still do and is wonderful, but looking about how all of these things interlock with other struggles.
How about you? How did you get involved in the struggle?
So for me, I got involved in OPERG, gosh, about, I would say, 5 years ago. I started out, like, in terms of working with the provincial office. I was provincial coordinator of OPERG for a bit and a board member at Toronto before that. But I got involved through student politics and student, like, unionism and campus stuff, as well as, like, stuff around Indigenous activism and disability justice stuff. So that kind of was my avenue into all those things. And then here I am. It's been I've been working at OPERG Guelph now for about a year and a half. It's been pretty rad, I've got to say.
to be where it all began.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about definitions, because I find in these, not just the interviews like this, but in, you know, if you attend an OPERG event, there's a kind of a set language. And in so much as when you're in any community, there's kind of a set language. So people hear the word social justice a lot.
Yeah.
So how would you define social justice?
How would I define social justice? This is a really good one. And you're right. One of the kind of ironic barriers of being involved in social and environmental justice work is that we have a lot of jargon. And for organizations and organizers that are attempting to educate people and tear down some of those barriers, we do fall into some of those, you know, those jargony traps. But in terms of social justice, I, for myself at least, I see social justice broadly as a struggle for interlocking forms of justice across different areas. So not just like economic justice, but, racial justice, justice in terms of food security, in terms of the ability of folks to access broadly, you know, the things that are contained in our society on multiple levels, right? And that ideas of social justice bring that together so that we're looking at how best to move, you know, people forward in our community in a way that brings everybody up.
Right.
And I think there are definitely people who would define social justice maybe differently than that, which is always one of the, you know, it's always one of the tasks of people involved in this kind of work is to figure out if we're all talking from the same general set of definitions. But at least for me, that's where I'm at with it.
I almost feel like that opens up the opportunity for people to, you know, start to, I guess, you know, sort of rip off the terms, you know, things like social justice warrior and people saying that as an insult, right? You know, one would think, you know, social justice, being a social justice warrior would be, you know, good. I mean, you could argue in a sense Wonder Woman is a social justice warrior, but I think there's a disconnect where people maybe don't hear the term, don't understand what it means, maybe don't understand that it can mean different things to different people, and then that opens up an opportunity for someone to say, oh, you're an SJW, and then mean that to be a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, I would identify as a social justice mage myself, but, you know, oh my God, I'm such a nerd. But, like, I think what's interesting is that, like, people take these terms in absence of ideology, in an absence of where people are coming from, right? Like, not that Oprah has a broad sense of, like, we're generally progressive and, like, have a whole umbrella of different people that are involved in the organization in terms of, like, the political perspectives that people come with. But, like, different ideological perspectives and different ways that people frame these things kind of shift where people are coming from with the terms, right? And I think that when you look at things from, you know, more conservative or more alt-right, to use that term, folks that like roam around the internet and talk about, you know, what social justice means, it's coming from that kind of a perspective, right? A parody of what people often put forward in terms of struggles for justice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, you know, it requires a lot of open and willing discussion from everybody to kind of figure out where people are at and really get to the heart of what people are trying to do when they call something social justice.
I almost feel like the parody is easier to understand than the reality. And that's not an insult to you or the work Goldberg does or the work any social justice organization does. But, you know, someone sees, you know, a joke about someone who's vegan and, you know, I get that. I don't necessarily get maybe the reasons why someone might choose to be vegan, but I get the joke about here's someone who doesn't.
Yeah. And I think that, like, that's often the case, right? And I think that one of the roles for Oprah to like, get to, like, the broader Oprah stuff is that, like, Oprah provides the opportunity to actually dig into what these things mean for people and what these different perspectives are and to how those come into practice, right? Like, I think that if you look at, like, things in our library, for example, which we have a pretty decently sized library within Oprah, you'll find all sorts of different perspectives. You know, it's not one unified singular perspective on a social justice topic or on say food justice or on any particular one thing. It's an opportunity to explore. And that's one thing that I really like about my job is that you get a chance to explore with people and kind of see where people are at and grow in terms of your understanding of these terms and around social and environmental justice. So that's something that I find really invigorating about my job, that you really get to dig into these kind of things and still learn. And that's something that, you know, I think in our office we're always learning, everyone involved, including, you know, staff. So it's something that I think is a great opportunity with this kind of space.
And it's something ever evolving too,
yeah.
Because what might have been environmental justice in 1976 is not environmental justice now.
Exactly, right? I mean, you can, if you look back in our archives, you'll see some wild assertions here and there about what, you know, these things are. But it's a process of learning and growing that's kind of inherent to a space like OPIRG. And I think that's something that, like, outside of the strictures of just, like, you know, you go to class and you do your kind of thing. To be able to be in a space where you can kind of learn in a more open-ended fashion is something that I really cherish and is one of the reasons why I kind of got in the door in the first place.
And it can be shocking to people to say, because you come to university, you pay your tuition, you're given your class schedule, you choose your classes, mm-hmm. you're told, you know, go buy these books, come to the class at this time, you need this percentage of you know, for your exam and this percentage for your essay, and then, you know, you maybe walk past OPIRG and there are people who are saying, no, we're going to break all, like we were talking before show, we're having disorientation week next week.
Yes, we are.
And that's, you know, it can be frightening, I think, not in like a scary movie sense, but in terms of just, you know, sort of shocking people out of the, I guess maybe the system that they are slotted in, whether it's intended or not, this system of, you know, going to class and getting your books and paying your tuition and getting your meal card, and the meal card only works in the UC after 2 and
exactly, right? And no, you're right. I think that's definitely part of it. And for a lot of people, that is definitely an intimidating prospect to be like, whoa, there's this whole other thing that's out here, like, around these topics that we're doing in university.
Yeah.
You know, like, we have a reading group that we just started out of our library about 6 months ago, Radical Reads. It's going to be starting up during disorientation. And some of the topics that we talk about in there are from, like, zines and, like, things that folks put together outside of, like, a general publishing industry kind of perspective.
Right.
And, like, so our first book is, like, Undoing Borders, a Queer Manifesto. So it kind of gets into, like, queer liberation and migrant justice in one piece. And that's something that if you're doing, like, say, international development, or you're doing, like, even geography or some other things like that, you might not see those perspectives right. in your classroom, but it complements or challenges some of those areas. And I think that would be, you know, I remember when I first started as a student and I was confronted with some of these things, and it was like, whoa, like, there's so much else out there. There's other perspectives that, like, even for my academic work, I would eventually kind of stream some of these things back in and then, you know, take out the good and, you know, move those into kind of more action-oriented kind of things. And I think that's an interesting balance that you can have as a student with a place like OPIRG.
Right.
You can definitely get into those kind of areas that you wouldn't necessarily see in a campus, like regular class space.
And it's not just the areas you don't get to explore, it's the areas you live in, you know. Yeah. So I think of something like Anti-Colonial Thanksgiving,
yeah,
where, you know, maybe you come from a small town and here's this group on campus that it's like is making a statement in that they're having this event that's saying, this is a better Thanksgiving. That other Thanksgiving is bad. This is a better Thanksgiving. And I think for a lot of young people who probably live fairly insular lives, and it's like, well, Thanksgiving is bad? I don't understand.
Yeah, well, I mean, and this is the thing, right? Is you get into, like, histories that people, that are often untold in communities and in spaces, and it's something that people, like, have to reconcile, right? It's always difficult, and it's something that at OPIRG, like, we try to provide, you know, ways in for people to experience that and to see these other narratives that exist out there, to understand, for example, like, you know, the long narratives of colonialism just here on the land that the city is on, right, and this campus is on, and what that means, you know. Like, even thinking about some of the stuff that OPIRG has done traditionally, right, like our river cleanup, is like, how do we think about the rivers in terms of, like colonialized spaces, in terms of, like, indigenous peoples seeing those rivers as, like, a gathering place? And what does that mean in terms of our work? How do all those things fit together? How does that, like, challenge some of the earlier narratives even of our space? You know, so
it's an interesting way to think about it, because, you know, the Speed River, the Armosa River, they're dammed in places.
Yeah.
There are bridges over them, which is probably not something the First Nations here would have probably done.
Yeah, certainly not. Certainly not.
Well, we've talked about who OPIRG is, when it started, what it does, but how does OPIRG work?
So, in terms of how OPIRG works, it works in a bunch of different ways. We're a non-hierarchical organization, which means in like plain speak that we try to run ourselves in a fairly flat fashion so that everybody has the ability to engage and talk about and drive the issues at OPIRG.
OPIRG is a flat circle.
Essentially. So like, for example, we run on consensus-based decision-making so that everybody has a voice around the table at our board meetings. We do have a board because we're still a nonprofit.
Right.
And so, like...
That's a law thing.
Yeah, that's a law thing. Yeah. But so we have a board that's mostly run by students with 2 to 3 community members. And then we have action groups. And our action groups, which I mentioned earlier... they all have their own internal processes and run fairly independently, but correspond with our board. Our board has various committees, and our board has various staff, which includes me. I'm very lucky to work for a lovely group of folks on our board and to work for students and community members. Currently, our membership includes undergraduate and graduate students, as well as general community members, which could include like staff and faculty and whomever, you know, in the broader community.
Mm-hmm.
And so OPIRG kind of works like on a technical level in that way. But in terms of like how the organization functions, it functions broadly on a lot of strong work from volunteers and from members that kind of direct the particular things that we get involved in, you know, like... a lot of our like long-standing projects, even like the Speed River project, have largely been pushed by community need or desire, or by like people who are just really interested in a particular area and topic. You know, for example, like we're currently running a film series. We've run film series in the past, but for the current one, it's run by a few of our board members and staff. But it's been largely in response to the idea that like we'd want to get more connections with other social and environmental justice groups that do film stuff. We want to, you know, respond back to some areas in the community where that's needed and kind of build that up, you know? And I think that that's true for a lot of the things that we do. We try to be mindful of what folks in the community are already doing, how we can help out, and even like how we can take a back seat and not be, you know, OPIRG, but like help out other folks and build up other things in the community. Because I think for a lot of folks at OPIRG, I think that's honestly some of the most important stuff that we could do is to not be OPIRG, we are doing this thing, but we're just going to help you do this thing and facilitate things along.
And that's a tricky way to surf, because in thinking about this, you know, back in 76, there was no social media, there was no internet, there were no online forums and Facebook groups and things. So you needed something like OPIRG in your backyard to sort of bring like-minded people together and rally and decide on courses of action to...
Exactly.
But, you know, people might say, well, if that's what OPIRG does, that's, you know, you can do that on Facebook, you can do that on, you know, subreddits. But I think... And this is a point I always make in talking about, you know, the opportunities of the internet is that there is still a need for some kind of curatorial function. And that's probably where you know, establishment, if I can call OPIRG an establishment group. But, you know, in terms of a group that has a legacy and a reputation and has built that, OPIRG can make those connections and do so with a kind of legitimacy that someone just starting a Facebook group maybe can.
I think that's definitely like partially true. You know, I always hesitate towards like narratives of legitimacy because that, you know, like, because like then you're playing into like certain systems, you know, where it's like, you know, only certain people can make, you know, certain engagements and things. But one thing I will say about OPIRG is that, you know, because of OPIRG's history in Guelph and the time that we've spent with different organizations and building connections and networks, I think that's a really important thing for folks. And I think that the other thing is, if you're just starting out, OPRG is a great space to, right. you know, get training, to get like different resources where you can build those things for yourself, right? Like a whole number of organizations have kind of just sprung out of OPRG over the years, or like have been closely associated at one time while they were building things up. And some of them, we still have partnerships in different ways, you know, as they've grown. And a whole bunch of organizations on campus over the years have had, like, you know, OPRG support for this and that, and have kind of grown off into their own thing. So I think that's the cool thing about, another cool thing about OPRG is that, like, you get to see projects kind of grow on their own from within the organization or from an action group, and then just kind of move along. And OPRG can just say, cool, we were able to help out and see this kind of develop. And I think that that's an important role, I think, that we play in the community, is that, like, we can take that kind of helping role and then step back, you know, once it's needed. Because, like, in the end, what matters is not that OPRG is, like, out there as OPRG, but that the community has the resources that it needs to do the things that it wants to do.
Right. And I think, and I wasn't sure how to phrase it, but from the political angles of it, you know, we have, it seems like the political environment is split, but sort of between the two forces of, you have the one side, and you call the more conservative side, where you know, they perhaps don't consider things like justice for our indigenous people or climate change priorities. And then on the other hand, you have centrist, left-leaning politicians like Justin Trudeau, who has talked a really good game about things like electoral reform, climate change, you know, helping indigenous peoples. But then you see the record so far, and it's been no on electoral reform, pipeline approval, you know, the cluster, you know, of that's been the murdered indigenous women and girls inquiry so far. Is that frustrating that you sort of have these politicians who are sort of couching their campaigns and their policies in these terms, but it seems like there's really no understanding, or there's really no action? And I think Grassy Narrows is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Kathleen Wynne took the step of, like, oh no, we're going to change it to Indigenous Affairs, you know, to do that outreach, and we're going to change the environment and climate change. But then you go to somewhere like Grassy Narrows, and they still have an environmental crisis there, or at Attawapiskat, where they're still trucking in water.
Exactly, right? Or even if you look at things at Amjanong, which is near Sarnia, right? Like, they're in the midst of Chemical Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they often work with various PERGs, you know, on various things. And it's like, every year, you still hear folks with the same kind of issues, the same chemical spills, the same health effects. And so, yeah, it's definitely frustrating. It's something that, like, you know, OPERG, as a group, supports people who do a lot of different kinds of work, and a lot of different kinds of engagement with political and social processes. And I know for the folks that, like, broadly do the kind of more lobbying-y kind of thing, even outside of our space, like, you know, there's always these kind of walls, right? And so for OPRG, I think it's always really great that we provide people with a number of different ways to engage, right? And a number of different ways to learn about, you know, ways to engage in moving forward issues of social and environmental justice. And, you know, sometimes that's, you know, writing a letter. Sometimes that's, you know, doing support for, you know, indigenous land defense.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can really vary in terms of, like, what, you know, OPRG's role is in terms of giving people, like, getting people to know what the avenues are out there.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, only through a multitude of different things that people want to engage in and choose to, that we can, you know, provide whatever support we can things really, you know, move forward. It's always difficult. And I think when you look at some of these things where, like, if you look back through OPRG's records and you find different struggles that have been going on for 40 plus years, it could be seen as really disheartening.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I think the fact that people have continued to be engaged, and that we've been, you know, I think, growing over these 40 years of people who understand all these issues and who are pushing in various different ways for these things to move forward. I think that's a positive, that people at least are engaged, and we have people who are willing to, you know, go out there and do what they need to do to see, you know, justice brought about.
So having said that, when you go home at the end of the day, and maybe this goes the same for all of the staff members of OPIRC, but when you go home at the end of the day, is it with a sense of satisfaction that you fought the good fight all day long, or is it with a sense of, oh God, I have to get up and do this all over again tomorrow because the struggle never stops?
I mean, for us, because we play a support role, at least for me, like and this is something at least on a personal level that I often say about OPIRG, is that OPIRG is not my personal activism. I'm here to support people in terms of doing their stuff. And I, like, often very strongly agree with a lot of the things that, you know, we support and a lot of the struggles that people engage with and do that stuff myself. But for me, I think, like, I see it as, like, my role at OPIRG is to, like, help people along, to give people the options of what they can do, mm-hmm. and to support them as much as we can in the objectives that they set out, right? So at least that's how I personally see it. I think, you know, everybody who's worked at OPIRG over the years probably sees it a bit differently. But for me, at least, that's how I go about it, right? And I think that, you know, we do what we can, and we do the best that we can to give people the tools to do what they want to do. And I think that's at least how I see it with OPIRG and how I conceptualize, like, the role of staff at OPIRG. It's that we're trying to help people tackle the issues that they see as important in the ways that they and the people that they're working with see as the best way to go forward. And that's a bit of a different way to look at some of this stuff, maybe, but it's something that I feel keeps me grounded in terms of, like, what the role of a staff person in an organization like this should be.
Interesting. Well, maybe to end on a positive note, I didn't want to give you time to promote what's coming up at OPIRG, what people can keep an eye open for, whether you're a student or a non-student.
Oh, there's so much. It's like the next month and a half at OPIRG is just going to be, like, amazing. So with the schedule for disorientation is online at Disorientation Guelph. It is our common set of events with a bunch of our pals on campus, including CFRU and the folks at Girkhead and Outline and a whole bunch of other cool people. But we'll be involved in a few different things. So we're going to be having a session of Radical Reads. I mentioned the book that we're doing earlier, which is Undoing Borders, A Queer Manifesto. That'll be on the 18th at our office, so that's on 24 Trent Lane. Our first event for disorientation is an info session and welcoming with Students Offering Welcome. Those folks are doing some really great refugee support work here in the community, so they're on for the 12th of September from 6 to 7 at our office. We've got, we're going to be helping out folks with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals Youth Training, which is being run by a group of students here on campus on the 16th at 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. At the university. We're doing a dinner and info session for OPIRG at our office again on the 19th. That's at 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. And basically, if you want to hear more about OPIRG and hear about OPIRG from other perspectives than mine, there's going to be a whole bunch of us there, all the staff, a bunch of our board members, a bunch of folks involved in action groups who will be talking about these things as well. And our friends at Fossil Free Guelph are doing a booth in the UC on the 21st from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we're going to be doing a book launch on the 23rd, location to be determined, but it's about the book Why Don't the Poor Rise Up. It's going to be a book launch and organizing forum, so we're going to be talking a lot about how folks can organize around anti-capitalist issues and organizing folks around broadly working class kind of stuff. So it's going to be really interesting. We've got one of the editors coming in of the book, Ajamu Nangawai, as well as two chapter authors, which I'm really excited for. They're a really great crew of folks and are just super engaged with, you know, organizing and social justice and environmental justice organizing. So they're going to be super, super great to hear from in the next little while. And beyond that, we are also going to have, for our film screening, a group of films entitled Freedom to Move, to Stay, to Live, Justice for Migrant. And so that's with Migrant Justice Guelph and Students Offering Welcome and OPERG through our Radical Reels film series. That's on the 27th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. It's going to be fantastic. There's a whole bunch of films that are going to be showing for that, and that will be in UC441. And I guess the last big thing that we're involved in is that we're also supporting CFRU in Amy Goodman in Conversation, the Guelph stop of Amy Goodman floating around Ontario. So I'm really excited for that. Your co-host on another on another show, Scotty Hertz.
I've heard of him. Yeah.
Yes, yes, that guy. He'll be interviewing. I'm super excited for him. I was talking to him a while ago about that, and it's just super.
I'm excited for him too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that all sounds great. I'm gonna feel a bit conflicted advertising my Patreon after talking about a book launch about anti-capitalism. But
look, most outfits like that do like these kind of things. Like that book, people are still charging for that book. you need to eat, man.
It's very true.
You know, like we live within a capitalist system. Like people need to exist, but that doesn't mean it should still be the system. That's a wider conversation, perhaps, for folks. But
that does feel like a wider conversation and a good place to leave it.
Yeah.
People have a right to exist. If that's the message of OPERG,
I think
that's perfect.
Yep. Yep.
Well, Brad, thanks so much for all your time today, and
thanks so much.
I think we'll probably see you out and about with so much to do in the next couple of weeks.
Awesome. Thanks so much, man.
And once again, that was Brad Evoy of OPERG, and you can learn more about OPERG's busy slate of upcoming events at OPERGGuelph.org or by finding them on social media at facebook.com/GuelphOPERG. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to GuelphPoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. There is a Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, you can donate to the Guelph Politico Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.